Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for this next hour, Joy B. Thanks for listening in.
And I am Ursula Rudenberg. We have a great show today with some inspiring guests, so stay with us. First off, here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Thanks very much. As always, it's good to be here on this Friday. Let's start our news summary the way we always do, with a look back at what made news in last Saturday's Ames Tribune. And what made news was word of a data breach to the City of Ames' parking ticket payment system, a breach that might have affected 4,600 customers who paid a city-issued ticket on the Ames online payment system between August 10th and November 19th. Written and email notices to those affected began being issued last Friday. The breach affected only parking system payments. Officials said no other City of Ames payment systems were compromised. Also making news in the trip last Saturday, the change in leadership at the Ames Middle School. A change school officials said was made to improve the culture at the school. Ames High School Principal Spence Evans assumed a leadership role at the middle school, with Associate High School Principal Brian Carrico taking on a bigger role at the high school. Officials said the changes were temporary and prompted by, in the district's words, an effort to address feedback we received from stakeholders who wanted to see an improved culture at the middle school. Officials said no specific incident prompted the change and that police were not involved. No one was commenting on the record about the status of middle school principal Dan Fox. Saturday's Tribune also reported that urban expansion, at least in the few areas where Iowa cities are growing, is eating up some of the state's best farmland. Ankeny was singled out as one example, where much of the land being developed for housing is high-quality soil for raising crops. Other growing communities taking up former farmland include Clive, Urbandale, and North Liberty. It's a long story, and you can read all about it in last Saturday's Tribune. And one more note from Saturday's paper, word that the City of Ames Public Arts Commission had approved a birdhouse building competition that they hope will encourage broad participation in the community. The contest will include various categories based on age and experience. Birdhouses will be put up in parks starting next May 20th. Ames Mayor John Hala called it a great opportunity for everyone from preschool on up to be a part of art and be out learning in the parks. Sunday's Tribune featured a long takeout involving an 18-year-old Southeast Iowa teenager who attends the Corners Academy, an alternative setting for West Burlington high school students. He's the linchpin of a story about how, across Iowa, a handful of school districts are changing their policies and creating opportunities for students who face a variety of challenges and who otherwise might drop out. That same issue reported the results of an extensive investigation that showed that the Midwest faces worsening trouble with undrinkable well water, recreational lakes choked with toxic algae, and water treatment plants needing budget-busting upgrades to remove pollution washing from farm fields and from industries. 10 years ago, a government task force said it would cut nitrate and phosphorus pollution 45% by 2015 in an effort to both help the Gulf of Mexico, where the nutrients have created a big dead zone in which wildlife cannot survive, and to protect the health and safety of Midwest waters. Now the dead zone remains a problem, and that 45% goal has been pushed back 20 years, and it's not clear any progress has been made. Sunday's Trib has all the details about this troubling issue. The paper also had some lighter stories last Sunday, including one that reported that despite bad weather, the opening week of Christmas tree sales had gone just fine. The Iowa Christmas Tree Growers Association says there are only two Christmas tree farms in Story County, one near Maxwell, the other north of Cambridge. Trib editor Michael Crum visited the one near Cambridge, and he reported a steady stream of customers were pulling into the farm's parking lot this past Saturday. 7 to 10 foot trees seemed to be the most popular. And there was another feature story of note about a mysterious good deed doer in Story City who struck again last week. Business owners arrived at their downtown shops and found whimsical knitted creations awaiting them. Seems a secret Santa of sorts had created a variety of Christmas-themed items such as trees and stockings and hung them on businesses' front doors while they were closed. No one knows who did this, but as one person said, it's wonderful just to know somebody's thinking about us. And, of course, Sunday's Trib had word that Iowa State's football team had barely defeated Drake University 27-24 at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday in the Cyclones' last regular season game. Next for the Cyclones, a trip to the Alamo Bowl on December 28th, where they will face Washington State of the Pac-12 Conference. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's paper reported that the family behind three proposed hog confinements north of Nevada said it plans to demonstrate that livestock production done correctly can have minimal impact on neighbors. Brothers Scott, Kyle, and Eric Henry are seeking to put up the hog confinements in Richland Township. Each confinement is proposed to hold 5,000 hogs. Scott Henry told the Tribune that the primary reason for adding the livestock is to provide enough income opportunities for all three brothers to return to work on the family farm. The Henry family has lived and farmed in the Nevada area for many years. Right now, the family operates a multi-generational grain farm, Longview Farms, north of Nevada. Last Tuesday's paper also reported that trial has been scheduled for January 15th for two officials with the Huxley Fire and Rescue Association who are accused of theft after a state audit found unsupported disbursement of money between 2012 and 2017. 32-year-old Scott Wade Herman and 68-year-old Jana Lee Erickson have both been charged with second-degree theft and unauthorized use of a credit card. Herman was the association's president during the period that was reviewed by the audit, while Erickson was the association's secretary and treasurer. The state audit identified more than $5,500 in unsupported and improper spending, but the charging complaint filed in Story County District Court identified a total of just over $1,300. And Tuesday's Trib also reported that the Ames Historical Society has opened a new exhibit that illustrates the history of Ames. The exhibit contains photos collected by Farwell T. Brown, an Ames historian and a founder of the Historical Society. The exhibit will be on display at the Ames History Center at 416 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames until next August. One more note, the Trib reported that the Chicago Bulls NBA basketball team fired former Iowa State University basketball coach Fred Hoiberg. Hoiberg spent 3 years with the Bulls after leaving Iowa State. He is still basketball royalty around these parts, not just because of his coaching success at Iowa State, but because he had starred as a basketball player at both Ames High and at Iowa State. Wednesday's Tribune reported on a community meeting held in Nevada, where about 100 people attended, many expressing concerns about the three proposed hog confinements that I mentioned earlier. Some of the comments involved concerns with air and water quality and manure management in the permit areas. Newly elected Story County Board of Supervisor member Linda Merkin said she was there, in her words, to make sure we do everything we can to resist this. Newly elected Story County Treasurer Ted Rasmussen said, in his words, I'm concerned with anything that has to do with quality of life. Wednesday's paper also had word that a flat transport cart topped with 20 fully packed duffel bags, along with a few new pillows and some colorful stuffed animals, was the centerpiece for Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting. The display showed the donations that had been received during a recent foster care drive by employees of Story County. Wednesday's paper also reported that an Ames man pleaded not guilty to charges that he harassed Ames High School principal Spence Evans on Twitter and that he allegedly made false allegations against Evans to district officials from a fake email that hid his identity. 49-year-old David Joseph Lundeberg was arrested in October. Court records reveal that he posted Twitter messages mocking Evans and that he sent email to Ames school board members making false accusations against Evans. Also Wednesday, word that one person was injured and another received a ticket after a five-car crash that shut down parts of South Duff Avenue near Highway 30 on Monday. Authorities said the driver who was cited was southbound on the outside lane of Duff when he swerved to avoid vehicles stopped in front of him, causing a chain reaction crash. The Trib also reported on Wednesday that there had been two reports of a possible mountain lion sighting near Nevada in the past week, but no evidence had been found to confirm the presence of any such animals. Mountain lions are not unusual in Iowa, as they sometimes move into the state from Nebraska and South Dakota. And one more note from Wednesday's paper, word that the Boone Vet Hospital has opened the doors to its new facility on Eastgate Drive. The new building has more than 6,000 square feet of space, more than double the previous building's 3,000 square feet. Thursday's Trib, yesterday's, reported that the Iowa State University Police Department has announced that its new safety initiative called ISU Guardian will become available for students this coming spring. The program will let a person's smartphone become an instant safety device. Students will be able to connect to friends or family and establish the student's location at any time. Thursday's paper also reported that members of the Ames community encouraged mixed-use development and more public service help for the homeless as they gave city officials input on what they thought the goals and priorities should be for the city and for the community development block program. Many community members said that housing for homeless individuals with mental illness was important to them. Also yesterday, the Trib reported that the Hickory Grove Campground, southwest of Colo, will still be open next year, but activities at Hickory Grove Lake will be in pause mode. Hickory Grove Lake will undergo a major restoration project costing nearly $3.5 million. The lake will be fully drained and dredged with the goal of filling it back up in 2020. And one more note from yesterday's paper, a preview of tomorrow's Shop with a Cop program in Ames, when police officers will take children shopping for Christmas presents. The program has been going on for the past quarter century. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be right back here on Monday with a look at news from around the state. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile. Time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
Want to win a pizza party for your homeroom and start collecting coins for Grace's Coin Drive? The coins will be donated to Blank Children's Hospital. That gives you 2 weeks to collect as many coins as you can. Every penny counts. Your homeroom teacher will collect coins daily. The donations will benefit the children of Blank Children's Hospital.
That's how 13-year-old Grace McCunn, otherwise known as Amazing Grace, has kicked off her yearly coin drive at the Ames Middle School to help children in Des Moines at the Blank Children's Hospital. Grace is herself a middle school student and an Ames resident. She is also holding a toy drive at this time as well. Her mission is to help children in the Blank Children's Hospital, a mission that started when she herself was diagnosed with chronic daily migraines and ended up staying at the Blank Children's Hospital for a while. Her experience became the beginning of a whole new life for Grace and connection to something bigger than herself and bigger than she had imagined. I'm Joy B, and together with KHOI reporter Maggie Westfold, we were able to sit down with Grace and listen to her tell her amazing story.
It started very small, like I wanted to get out of the hospital. And when I was leaving, I saw a couple people, you know, who had to stay and saw me leaving. And I felt kind of upset about how they had to stay there for a longer period of time than I did. Because being in there for so long is not the best way to spend some time.
So you came away from there wanting to do something for them.
Yeah. So I decided maybe if I did something maybe small to make something good for them, like a toy, it'll help them have a better stay. So, yeah.
Well, how did you come up with that first idea?
Well, my brother, my sister, and I, we would do lemonade stands just for fun, I guess, to make, you know, a little cash, just spend it a little bit. And one day I was like, well, if I do a lemonade stand, maybe I could get so much as just maybe $50 just to get like a toy or something, or just put it towards blank so they can use it on something that is more meaningful and more useful than for myself. Because I have a lot of things for myself, but I know other people don't necessarily, they really don't have a lot. So I thought maybe if I gave back, it would help just one kid, maybe. One kid, that's all I was hoping for.
How did the profits go with that first lemonade stand? How much did you make that first time?
$50 or $100. I took the check down to blank, and I was, they were all like, thank you. And I was like, it's the least I could do, basically.
Tell us from there how your fundraising developed.
Well, I got really interested in helping and supporting out blank. Blank did a lot for my family and for myself, so I was thinking maybe if I just kept going, I could make something so small become just a little bit bigger. And I didn't think slightest bit thought I was going to get this far. Like, I was like, well, if I get to $500, that's like amazing. I asked my friends if they wanted help out with the lemonade stands, and you know, they were sure, it's fun. So we did them probably almost every day for, I think, like the whole summer. And it was amazing how many people would stop by. Some people would, you know, pass, and then they see the sign, and then they turn around. And I was like,
cool.
It was kind of cool. Cause
so
where
you had
I
a
live,
sign
yeah.
that said blank.
Yeah, and where I live, it would be the corner, and then it was like the main road, and they can turn around and come back. And it was like amazing how many people would come back.
Do your friends like to help you then?
Yeah.
Feel inspired?
I think so. The two people who've always helped me are Eve and Allie, and they've always been there with me and supported me through everything, and I think it's very special that they do that, because
sure.
a lot of people wouldn't do that, and it touches my heart.
Yeah.
Or it touches me a lot, because they stuck with me. They really stuck with me.
Where did you go from lemonade stand? What happened next with trying to earn money for Blank Hospital?
My family is members out at the Ames Golf and Country Club, and we asked Corey, the manager, if we could maybe put just on a toy drive so people could come in from this time stamp to this time stamp and bring in toys, and I'd be there, I'd collect them, and then the day or two after that, my family and even I would take down the toys down to Blank and give them to them. And just when I took it down the first time, there were so many kids who, you know, they walk about in the halls to get exercise. And they were, you could tell they lit up once they saw. They're like, oh, well, maybe I could play with that. Because it was so amazing how many people brought in things. Like, I think my mom still has pictures from the first day that we did the toy drive, and it was amazing. There was people bringing in big things, little things, massive, like, toys and Barbie dolls. And, you know, they can't bring stuffed animals in, so we had, like, limits and stuff. But we decided maybe if we keep that going, that I think it would be better. It would help out Blank a lot, and so I wanted to keep it going.
Why don't you talk about what's going on right now?
So I go to the Ames Middle School. I'm lucky enough that my community supports what I do, and the teachers and staff, they always support and help me out through everything. So I asked, you know, my principal, is it okay if I can do a coin drive for Blank Children's Hospital from this date whenever you're free? They're like, sure. So it would be my third coin drive at the middle school. We're actually starting it December 3rd. We go for 2 weeks, so it gives students the time to collect coins, put it in with their homerooms, because I give each homeroom a little bin that says, you know, Grace's Coin Drive on it. We put up flyers around the school. They'll see them. A lot of them will bring in change, coins as a very much, so they thought, well, I'll bring in some. But it really adds up.
It really does.
It really does. It honestly really does. And so the winners from sixth grade, like the homeroom who gets the most coins, in seventh and eighth grade, I give them a prize. My parents and I will go get some pizza and give it to the homerooms.
Yum.
And for like a congratulations, you helped out.
Yeah.
Last year, I asked the Iowa State Athletic Department women's basketball coach if any of his basketball players would be able to come in. So three came in and helped bring the pizza around to the homerooms. And this year,
cool.
This year I'm hoping I'll get in some more women's basketball.
So they not
players.
Only got a pizza, they got it. They had it served to them by famous athletes from Iowa State.
Yeah, so it was amazing how you know those students, the women's basketball team, was wanting to help out, hoping to get. You know, either men's basketball players come in or women's basketball. Women's basketball players come in because it's amazing how, like...
Well, now I'm looking at something that says Grace's Toy Drive. So this is what you talked about with the country club and the toys that you were able to take down. So you're doing this... Are you doing this again?
Yes, I'm doing. Yeah. So basically, I'm holding the toy drive on Sunday, December 16th this year, from 3 to 5 p.m. And Corey, the manager, he makes his Corey soup and hot toddy on the club. So it's like they get food with it too, but new unwrapped toys, no stuffed animals, no, you know, food items. Pajamas, we would really... Blank really wants some pajamas for the kids who maybe come into the emergency room all of a sudden and they didn't know they were going to have to stay.
Right.
So they didn't bring anything with them. So just having maybe pajamas and then movies, books. So Blank is doing this new thing in the NICU where they have the parents of the NICU babies. They have the parents read stories to the babies because it'll help the baby get better, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it helps the connection.
Yeah, the connection, relationship-wise, trust-wise.
Right.
Then they'll let the parents take home the books that they read to them. So a lot of books are very needed in that time because this year, during the holiday season, a lot more families have to stay down at Blank.
What would be the reason that they give you that they don't need any stuffed animals, just so the people know?
They cannot be sanitized.
Okay.
And they might be allergic to the stuff in the stuffed animals, or the medicine will kind of not mix very well. Yeah. Sometimes that'll happen.
There's concerns about allergies, immunity among patients. Were there any other things that they should not bring?
Food items, no played with toys.
Okay, so new toys.
New toys. Hardcover books instead of, you know, the soft for younger kids. They suggest hardcover books. So, and on Christmas Day, Blink has Santa come around to each patient and give them a special toy that they maybe been wanting or they like. Certain personality kind of, like, they like it and stuff like that. So it'll help them kind of ease, you know, the worries of what might happen to them or what's going to happen in the future. And so I think that with all these toys, they'd have a better kind of staying over the Christmas season. Because staying during Christmas is kind of terrible.
That would be really hard.
Or just over the holiday season.
So we've talked a little about your current fundraising here and what's coming up. I'd like to back up a little bit because I remember reading about a wall where you had to pay $10,000 or more to have a brick. Just tell us about that.
Yeah, so first time I brought in my check, I gave it to them, and I saw the wall, you know, shiny and beautiful, and I was like, yeah, I started walking over to the wall, and I was asking them, how much does it take, you know, can I get my name up here? And they were trying to get me away from it to this, but I was so focused on this wall. I was like, well, how much is it? And they were like, it's $10,000. And I pointed my hand up to the wall and I was like, I'll be back. I'm coming back.
That number didn't stop you, huh?
It didn't.
Well, that should have
told
them something.
It didn't fly over my shoulder. Kind of.
That should have told them something about Grace right there. Can you talk about how you reached that number?
My mom, actually, she came up with the idea of a 5K.
Good
and
for mom.
So I would still raise doing lemonade stands. I was doing a lot of lemonade stands. I did one hot chocolate stand in front of my friend's business. And then I was probably at 5,000 or so. And then I went around to some businesses and was asking, you know, would you be able to support, blah, 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 blah. And then George White Chevrolet, I think it was, said that for every car they sold, they would give me $500. And at the end, they gave me $3,000.
Wow.
Wonderful.
They called it the lemonade sale.
Oh, nice. I saw you with a picture with lemonades.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Oh, the award I got for the philanthropy thing.
That that's
that would be the award. Wow. It's now hanging on the top of our fireplace. Very beautiful.
The award you got was 2018 Outstanding Youth in Philanthropy, and it was awarded by the Association of Fundraising Professionals. When you received information that you were going to receive that award, what did that feel like?
Well, when I first was nominated for the award, I was thinking there's so many other kids that are doing kind of the same thing I'm doing. They're trying to help out their community and maybe a hospital or someplace, or not really. I didn't know much about it. And then, you know, a lot of my friends, the people who have been helping me, they wrote letters to try and nominate me. And then I think it was like July or something, like the 1st of July, when they sent an email to my mom. They said, you know, Grace won. Please keep this, you know, personal until August 1st. Mm-hmm. And so I was like,
couldn't
tell
talk
anybody.
About it.
Don't tell anybody. But I told a couple of my friends. I mean, I was very proud of myself.
There
I was very surprised I did win. It's what I always say. Never in a million years did I think I would ever come this far and have so many people know who I am and like what my story was. And to see when I stood up on the podium and, you know, spoke to them about what I've been doing and why I do it and how much they were fascinated on what I do and how I do it every, like, all the time, and I still fit in other things. It was amazing how at the very end of it, I was like, felt so grateful for everybody who was like supporting me, and, you know, my parents and my sister and my brother and my friends. And it was amazing. Like, I brought my two best friends. They took the time out of their school day to come down and support me. And by doing that, this shows me how much love I have and how many people support and love me. And oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, when I first stood up there, I was so amazed on how many people brought their attention. It was like, woo. Mm-hmm. They're staring at me. And I was like, felt a little under pressure. But at the same time, I just wanted to speak out about what I was doing. So the best way I could do it was kind of stand up there and speak about it. And
so I did want to ask your mom, Mary Jane. Evidently, this daughter of yours is pretty amazing. Have you been, like, just sat back and had a coffee in the morning and said to your husband, like, wow?
She just comes up with these ideas and we just go along with it.
My mom says I'm very persistent. She tells me that whenever I want something, I just kind of have to get it, have to do it.
I did see where you said you want to dedicate your life to making a difference and inspiring others to do the same. And then they said you were quoted as saying, if you can dream it, you can believe it, and you can do it. Do you have that up on your wall?
So basically that is, I think my mom and I came up with that. You know, my mom would always say, you know, you can do this. You just got to put your mind to it. So I kind of said, you know, if you dream it, you and believe it, you're going to be able to do it. And so that's kind of been my quote of the day, every day. I say it sometimes to myself, or I'll say it to some of my friends. And personally, I say it after every kind of speech I give. It's like at blank when I have my speeches, I always look at my mom and I say, if you dream it, you'll believe it, you can do it.
So do you think about your future when you guys are hanging out in the lemonade stand? Do you talk about, like,
well, a lot of my friends are like, well, Grace, you're going to go so far in the future. And I just,
there are people, they make a living as fundraisers. Do you think that you could do this someday for a profession?
I probably could. I don't know if I want to think about it right now because I'm right here.
You're focused. Yeah.
I want to do something now and not wait till the future. And, you know, it doesn't matter how old or young you are. You can still help out. Doesn't matter if just bring in, you know, a penny. It's still something. It'll help something. Mm-hmm. It adds up. And, you know, it'll grow fast, like with the coin drive. Some of those homerooms started out with nothing, but then they, you know, progressively found spare change, put it in. And some of the homerooms that were actually down at the bottom, like, they didn't really think about it. It kind of went over their shoulders. At the end, like, I think like a week before, they started realizing that it actually helps, and they put in a lot of their spare change. And mm-hmm. I thought it was amazing.
That was Grace McCunn. If you would like to donate a toy to Grace's Toy Drive, go to the Ames Golf and Country Club on Sunday, December 16th, 2018, from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. You will be offered Corey's Soup and Hot Toddy. The Ames Golf and Country Club is supporting 13-year-old Grace McCunn, who is collecting unwrapped toys, new pajamas, and new hard-covered books for patients at Blank Children's Hospital. Special toys can help make the stress and fear of a hospital stay more comforting. You can also drop off toy donations at Mormon Clothiers, Live Nutrition, Everett's Flowers, and Ames Spine and Sport. Or if you want to contact them and would like them to pick up your gifts, you can go to Amazing Grace Lemonade Race.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and thank you, Joy B., our other host, for that interview with Amazing Grace. You spoke with another guest this past week, Joy, warning to the listener that there's possible triggers with this topic.
The holidays can be difficult for those who are grieving. I interviewed Cindy Kopsel, homicide and violent crimes advocate from Ames Assault Care Center, extending shelter and support access. Access is holding a virtual online candlelight vigil in support of survivors of homicide. Access will post a looped video of a flickering candle starting today, Friday, December 7th, through Monday, December 10th. Access would like you to show your support in remembering those lost by posting a picture of a candle throughout the weekend. I would like to share with you a conversation that I had with Cindy Kopsel, homicide and violent crimes advocate at Access.
National Survivors of Homicide Awareness Month runs from November 20th to December 20th. Those family members and friends of the person who was lost. That's who we're thinking of at this time. This weekend, we're putting some things on our Instagram and Facebook's information there for survivors or friends of survivors, people who've lost someone. This weekend is a candlelight vigil. What we're going to do is we will have a candle lit, and throughout that weekend, if someone wants to light their own candle, they can do that in their own home or wherever it is that they want to do that. It'll be an online candlelight vigil, essentially. Then they can post if they want to say something on
Post pictures of the Instagram message or text message or Facebook message.
A poem or something that they want to say, a memory of that loved one. Any of that, we would love to have that shared with us this weekend.
So we could do it locally or internationally, nationally.
Oh, anybody, anywhere they can. Yes. We just want to honor them and remember them at this time. The holidays are particularly difficult. That empty chair at the table when the rest of the family is there can be very, very difficult.
And can you explain some things that you tell people that are going through this? Losing a person to violence or a survivor of violence?
Sure. One of the things that we want to do is to support that survivor. And what needs to be said is, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. And it's good to use the name of the person who died, keep that memory alive, and they appreciate hearing the name of that person. Part of it is just allowing them to talk about that person. And if someone's crying, it's okay. That's part of the healing process. What does help is to remember that each of us has a unique relationship with that person. The length of time from my grief isn't going to be the same as yours or anybody else's. We can't put a timeline on their grief. We need to accept people where they're at in their grief and support them as best we can. I mean, there may be times where you just sit silently. You don't say anything, and they don't say anything, but it's supportive to have you there. The part about homicide is that it's sudden, and it's unexpected, and it's uncalled for. It's not justified in any way. It's something that shouldn't have happened.
And it's a different question to
losing someone that I think makes it very, very difficult. And then you have the criminal justice process that maybe someone's charged, maybe they aren't. Maybe they never are. Maybe they're charged right away and the trial doesn't come. Maybe you get a trial in 3 months. Maybe it's a year. Maybe it's 2 years or 3 years down the road before you get to trial. And during all that time, those survivors have this uppermost in their minds, and it's something that they have to deal with on a daily basis, because it just doesn't go away.
And so you kind of get re-triggered or reactivated about that.
And that really takes a toll. Another thing I would say, you know, in accepting them, but also, you know, you have that relationship with them and you're there to support them. And when you leave, try to leave on a positive note of some sort. And by that, I don't mean have a great day or something like that, but that you help them to come back to their day. Even if it's asking about dinner, anything that kind of brings them back into daily living. So they're not just swallowed in their grief after you've had this time with them. And there are things that the community can do to help those survivors. When I think of the cost, the Crime Victim Compensation Program through the Attorney General's office covers a lot of things, but there are things they don't cover. Expenses that come from travel, depending on your relationship, they may not cover anything. They may not cover the hotel, because you have to get a hotel to come and be involved in the trial or observe the trial. Meals.
Very important.
If you're staying in a hotel, you've got three meals a day that have to be covered, and the trial may run a week, 3 weeks. It just depends. And so those are expenses. The travel is a big aspect of it, especially if they're coming in from out of state. There's a lot that the community could do to support a family, even like pet boarding. Or maybe there's daycare for the children, or maybe there's a family member or elderly member who needs daycare because of health issues or mental health, dementia or something like that, where there are disabilities that they need that daily assistance, but the family needs to be at the trial. Unfortunately, burglars look at the obituaries to target homes because they know the family won't be there. So they'll match up those obituaries and find their home location and hit those homes. So it's good to have someone in the home during those hours. So that's something friends of the family or whoever can be designated to be there, even if it's sitting in a car in the driveway, mowing the lawn.
And this time of year, maybe shoveling.
Shoveling. Helping with house cleaning. It could be walking the dog, giving the dog a bath. Think of cooking meals, just shopping. And we always think of cooking meals kind of in the immediacy of the funeral. It can go on for weeks or months, really.
Mm-hmm.
When someone's grieving, they barely have the energy to get out of bed. It's good to have that support. Whether it's you go over and have a cup of coffee, go for a short drive, but the key is to meet them where they're at, not where you think they should be.
And I know you're really valuable to our community, so I want to
thank you
so much.
The Homicide and Violent Crimes Program is a little over 2 years old now. When Access got this program, we began serving other crimes. We provide services, generally speaking, to victims of felony crimes, robberies and burglaries, where there's someone in the house, the murders, arson, kidnapping, the serious assaults, the ones that involve serious injuries, homicide and serious injury by vehicle, hate crimes, stalking, harassment, those kinds of things. So we provide advocacy services, we provide information on their rights as victims. We can assist with housing and transportation, grief support, and advocacy with the criminal justice system is a huge part of what I do. And we have a 24-hour crisis line, and we make a lot of referrals for other services that we don't provide, but some other agency does. If you're in that situation, there's support. There is help. Just give us a call, and we'll do our best to help.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Cindy Capsule, Homicide and Violence Crimes Advocate at Access. The hotline for Violent Crimes Crisis Line is 515-292-0519. Or you can call toll-free at 1-855-983-4641. 855-983-4641. You can also go this weekend, starting today till Monday, to the Facebook page for Access Assault Care Center, extending shelter and support, and post your candle. So personally, in memory of Iowa State University student Celia Barkeen Arosa Mena, would like to play one of her favorite songs called Yellow by Coldplay.
know I love you so.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you, Joy, for that report. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for this morning, and Susan Guiasta has joined us, together with Justin Claussen, Operations Manager for Public Works. Welcome back. Thank you, Justin, for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Susan is the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames.
Well, it's December, and it's getting quite chilly, and some of the calls that we get about this time of the year have to do with snow and the snow ordinance and snow plowing. So I'm actually going to toss it back over to Justin to talk a little bit about the winter preparations we do here at the city to keep our motorists safe.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, we have 630 lane miles of streets within the city.
Public Works, say that again. 630. 630 lane miles.
Lane miles.
So what's a lane mile?
So if you think of a residential block, one lane of traffic in each direction, mm-hmm. 1 mile of that would actually be 2 lane miles because we have to plow one direction and plow the other direction to clear it. So that's the way we think about it.
Okay. You cut the street in half and you stretch it into the full length of those two sides.
Exactly. And if you think about maybe Lincoln Way, that's 4 lanes wide. So that would be, 4 lane miles in 1 mile stretch of it. So we think of it in that term, which is confusing for some people. But the reason we do that is that's the amount of travel our plows have to travel when we plow streets. So we take those 630 lane miles or so, and what we do is, we break them up into things that are snow routes and things that are residential routes. And snow routes are probably the most important ones for people in the city, because if you live on a snow route, there's an ordinance that says if we get more than 2 inches of snow, we restrict parking on there.
That's right. Last week, when there was this blizzard being predicted,
yes,
my sister and my father were busily researching whether we were living on a snow route or not.
That's great.
Because my sister parks on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, so that... Boy, you teed me up perfect there. So what we want to do is encourage people to know whether or not you live on a snow route, because we want you to get your vehicle off. Because unfortunately, if you don't, what happens is it really slows down our response to the storm. Mm-hmm. And in turn, the ordinance does allow for ticketing and towing, which we don't like to do, but sometimes we have to, just in order to keep all modes of transportation, not only vehicles, but buses, bicycles, all sorts of stuff, to make sure we have a transportation network that works. So if you're wondering whether or not you live on a snow route, the simplest thing to do is pop your head outside, because there are red and white signs that say snow route along the street. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't see them or you're still kind of concerned and you don't know, another place you can go is to our website, cityofames.org/snow.
cityofames.org/snow.
Exactly. So that'll take you to a kind of a specialized web page that has anything and everything you want to know about snow and ice control, about how we do things. There's a link on there that'll take you to snow routes. You can click on it. It brings up a nice big map, shows all of our snow routes on there in red, mm-hmm. so you can figure out where a snow route is or isn't.
Again, if you're on a snow route, you need to be off of the street at night so that the snow plow can go through.
Yeah, and not only at night, sometimes during the day.
So because just in general.
If we're 2 inches of snow, it's going to happen. Now, we try very hard to publicize that it's going to happen. I'll give you an example. When that blizzard was forecast a couple weeks ago, we actually proactively enacted our snow ordinance. We kind of publicized it in advance, saying we're putting it into play like at noon or something. And the reason we do that is to give people enough notification so they can move their vehicles. Now, what happened in that snowstorm was we were kind of on the border of we might get 4 inches of snow or we might get nothing. Right. Well, we got nothing. And I'm okay with that.
But I am too.
But what we want to do is really get the community and the public involved so they know, hey, be prepared, because it may happen. We don't control that. If that storm moves 30 miles one direction or the other, we could have a lot of snow. And so rather than wait for that to happen, we try to let people know in advance.
Justin, tell listeners where we publicize that snow
ordinance. We have it on the city website. There's a banner on top. If you ever go there to look, if you're ever curious about it, you can always go to the cityofames.org website.
Cityofames.org.
Correct. We also publish it on social media, Facebook page, Twitter. We reach out to local media, TV, newspapers, radio, such as, KHOI here. We try to put it everywhere we can. Channel 12, if you get Channel 12 in your home there. Any place that might carry this for us, we try to publicize it out to those people. So we try to let people know. If you sign up for alerts on our website, there's a place you can go do that. We highly encourage people to do that. You can customize what you get alerts from the city. They will send you an email on things. The snow ordinance is one of them. We try to let people know as best we can. We also work closely with, Iowa State. We have a lot of students in town, so they have ways to reach people sometimes that we don't as well. So we partner with them to help get the word out.
So in the case of the last blizzard that we thought we were going to get, we did get a lot of calls asking us if this ordinance was still in effect, but it doesn't go into effect if we don't get the snow. So if you look outside and you're getting ready to move your car and there's no snow, either you have to watch to see if we're just late or it may not be in effect. And there is no all clear, and there's a really specific reason why we don't say, hey, we're done. It has to do with how we plow.
Yeah, it's a struggle for us sometimes to give an all clear, because what happens is the way our ordinance is written, you have to stay off of the street until it is plowed from curb to curb. So the entire street is plowed and then it stops snowing. Sometimes we plow the street curb to curb, but it's still snowing or there's another band coming in that may give us enough. We may have to go back and treat it again. So,
mm-hmm. Is the snow ordinance only about plowing? Does it refer only to plowing, or is there more to a snow ordinance than stay off the street?
Is the sidewalk part of the snow ordinance?
No, the snow ordinance is strictly about plowing,
I
would
say.
It's
just stay off the street.
Yeah.
That's basically what it's about.
Basically, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, but there's a responsibility for private property owners to also keep their sidewalks clear of snow and ice as well. You know, we have a duty as property owners to make sure the public sidewalks are accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 feet wide is the way our code reads. You have to clear it 4 feet wide for the entire length of the property.
Does the city of Ames fine people for not shoveling their snow?
We don't fine, but so we work on a complaint basis. So if someone sees a sidewalk that hasn't been cleared and they notify the city, we'll go out and investigate it. We put a posting on the property, or if we have an email address for that property, we'll send an email and say, please clear all your snow and ice within the next 24 hours. So we give them an opportunity to do so, to comply with it. And if they don't do that, then what we do is we end up hiring a contractor to come and clear form, then we send them the bill. So kind of in way of a fine, but our goal is not so much to be punitive with it. We just want to make sure that people that need the sidewalks can access them.
Right, and it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be one of these places with all this compacted snow and ice in front of your building, right?
And it is hard. If you let it go that long, it is hard to
yeah.
get it back,
yeah,
get
it
a
is.
Struggle.
Yeah, we
problem.
Have a pedestrian world here where lots of people are getting to class and to school and grocery stores, and they use their feet to get there. It's mm-hmm. not safe when you encounter a ice-packed mm-hmm. sidewalk, so you know, we act on those complaints. We take them very seriously, and we post the notice to let people know you need to clear this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
snow is coming. It hasn't really hit us too badly yet, but we know it's there, and we know it's just lurking in the future.
Lurking.
And so we want people to be ready. One thing that has happened this season is that we've gotten a lot of precipitation, so we've gotten a lot of wet streets, and those can be challenging for snow and ice control. Justin sort of works his magic to decide how he's going to treat them. But every so often we'll get calls about, why are the streets white, or what are you doing to prepare for ice coming in?
Yeah.
Now, before we went on the air, I was told this is all about balance.
It is. Everything we do is about balance in one
okay.
form or another, I believe, especially in regards to ice control. The most effective way of removing snow or ice is mechanical, like a plow. But there are times where we have to prevent ice, or we have to break the bond of that ice to the pavement. In order to do that, we need chemicals. So that's typically in the form of a chloride. And here in Ames, we use salt. So sodium chloride is what we use. One thing that's very effective to do is if you can prevent that ice from bonding to your pavement. So the way we do that is through the form of anti-icing. So you might see a truck driving around spraying brine. It's going to look like water coming out. It's basically a salt water solution onto the roads.
Brine is salt and water.
Exactly. 23.3% salt to water ratio. So we spray that on the roads, and then we allow it to dry. So once it's dry, we now have a light film of salt there on the road. So what people will mm-hmm. see is they'll see white fuzzy lines, or they'll see white on the pavement. They wonder what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the salt and the chloride waiting to act. So the chloride will stay there until either enough vehicle traffic, wheel movement kind of moves it off to the side, or we get snow on it. We can't put that down when it's raining because it'll get washed right off
right.
the road.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be careful doing that. We can't put it down when it's too cold, because what happens is if our pavement temperatures are about below 15 or so, we will actually freeze it down to the road surface. So it's got a narrow window of where it works, but
mm-hmm.
it's very effective when we get it down in the right amount of time.
So it's about timing.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then the balance, as you mentioned earlier, is we really strive not to use more salt than we need, because
mm-hmm.
once salt gets into the water system, it never goes away. It's
right.
it's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very, very cognizant of how much we need, where we use it, why we use it. Of course, we're going to err on the side of safety, but we're also going to be smart about it. We're not going to have streets that are always clear and you've seen bare pavement and water running down it. That's not the goal of our snow and ice control policy. Our goal is to provide safe and effective movement of vehicles so that sometimes there will be snow and there may be a little bit of ice. Hopefully we can break that. But adjusting your driving habits or your, you know, whatever, you know, if you're riding a bicycle, you know, adjusting those habits to the way the road conditions are is what's the most critical thing.
You said that the salt never gets out of the water again. How does that work? Is there a concern that if we keep putting salt down on our streets that we're going to get salt into our water system?
It's a great question. I don't know that I have the exact answer for that. But here in Iowa, we've been fortunate that we do not have such high chloride levels in our water system that we're facing these imminent issues. But for example, you can go to Illinois and I know some places on the East Coast, they are testing water in their streams and their chloride levels are highly elevated. Some of it's from road salt, some from other stuff. They're actually under some decrees from the state and federal governments of how much chloride they can use. So it's a again, another balancing act of making sure that we don't get to that point where we're concerned about it. But, you know, we're using enough to be efficient in maintaining our goals.
I'm hearing that the city of Ames is paying attention to balance, to timing, and also to communication.
And safety, absolutely. Safety is our number one goal.
Going into winter.
That's correct.
Yeah, so just a few more things for winter. So I'm going to get off streets for a minute and just talk about Christmas tree recycling. If you have Christmas trees that are live trees and you want to get rid of them this year, we are again offering Christmas tree recycling at the Parks and Recreation Maintenance Facility on 13th Street. I always say at the bottom of the cemetery hill. You could bring your Christmas tree with it not decorated and no garland, no stand, and you can drop it in our recycling pile. We'll use it in the spring. We'll mulch it up and use it in the parks. So that's always a great service that's available through the end of January. So just if you're planning ahead. Also, the deadline coming up to submit your application to volunteer to be on a city board or commission. It's not coming up till February 8th, but I always encourage people to think about maybe a volunteer opportunity if they're interested in serving, giving back to the community. We have a lot of vacancies on our boards and commissions. These are things such as the Library Board of Trustees, the Parks and Recreation Commission, Planning and Zoning Commission. These might not be things you know a lot about, but maybe you just have an interest. You don't have to have background in these areas, but just a willingness to serve and your interest in learning. Those applications are on our website. We direct everybody back to our website, cityofames.org, under Government, Boards and Commissions. So please take a look at that if you're so interested. We have a special event coming up on December 19th. We're going to cut the ribbon on a new ice skating rink. So the city of Ames was lucky enough to be one of two cities in Iowa given an outdoor ice skating rink by Wells Fargo and the Iowa Wild hockey team. And we will be able, because of this donation, to put up two ice skating rinks in South River Valley Park. So we'll have a rink basically designated for hockey and a rink designated for recreational figure skating. We are hoping that the weather cooperates and we'll be able to flood those rinks and cut the ribbon at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 19th at South River Valley Park. Are you a skater?
I am. Well, I was. I have my ankles. And I'm old enough to have, you know, been a Lake Laverne skater.
Wow. Well, I was there too, so.
It was good old days.
Ice skating is incredibly popular in this area and very excited by this idea of two skating rinks.
South River Valley Park is where?
On 13th Street, actually. If you go past the Cemetery Hill and head east on 13th Street, North River Valley would be, if you're heading east, North River Valley's on your left, South River Valley's on your right.
Okay, very exciting.
It is exciting.
Okay, anything else, Susan?
Well, we have a new reporting app. I'll have Justin talk a little bit about because it is in his area of expertise. If you are out and about and mobile, why don't you try Ames on the Go?
Yeah, if you look up Ames on the Go, you can find things to report such as potholes, streetlights out, that sort of stuff. Things that you might normally contact our public works department about that we can help with. It's a way to report to us and we can fix those issues for the citizens.
Thank you. Justin Clausen, Operations Manager of Public Works, here with Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Public Relations Officer. And this has been Local Talk. I've been one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Joy B. We broadcast Local Talk at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can also listen to the show online at khoifm.org. Our show was engineered by Aladdin. Thank you, Mr. Aladdin. And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. We also heard Smile by Nat King Cole and Yellow by Coldplay. As always, stay tuned. Upcoming next is Democracy Now! And national news headlines from Pacifica Radio. Morning Masterpieces at 9 o'clock. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember that your participation as audience and your support during this fall fund drive is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio. Support for KHOI comes in part from the Ames Alternative Gift Market this Christmas season, available 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on December 8th and December 15th at the Wheatsfield Cooperative Grocery, 413 Northwestern Avenue in Ames. This event is an opportunity to learn about and support charitable projects around the world as well as in our own community. Learn more at alternativegifts.org. Support KHOI, your local community media. And know that you are being part of keeping communication and community voices alive in Central Iowa. Basic membership with KHOI is $55, or be a sustaining member for $240 or more. To donate, go to khoifm.org, that's khoifm.org, and use the donate button for safe donation online. Or send us a check, or even come on down to 410 Douglas Avenue, in Ames. That's 410 Douglas Avenue, 510 in Ames. Or come on down and see for yourself your local community media as a work in progress. Thank you for supporting KHOI, khoifm.org.